yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just be.
Our guest this week grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, earned a BS degree in economics from Marquette, and a JD from the St. Louis University School of Law. From 1987 to 92, he served as a trial attorney for the U.S. Department of Justice. From 2000 to 2005, he worked as an attorney for General Motors. And then from 2005 to 2008, he served as the U.S. attorney in Detroit. He has just become the chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan. His name, the Honorable Judge Stephen Murphy. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Honorable Stephen Murphy. Your Honor, welcome. An honor to have you.
Well, it's an honor to be here, and thanks for having me, Jack. I'm glad to be here.
Let's go back, St. Louis, Missouri, your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
Yeah, beautiful people. My mother was from the Italian neighborhood in St. Louis. She met my dad at a dance, I guess at a Catholic church. My father, of course, was 100% Irishman. His father was from the old sod, and they had probably a 65-year marriage before my mother passed away November of 2023. And I was just in St. Louis last month. My father's 87. He's still hanging in there. We spent some time together, and you know, they were great people. My father was a first college graduate in his family, or my mother's family. He was a personnel officer with a number of companies in St. Louis. He wanted to be his own boss, so he got a law degree from St. Louis University, probably 1974. And then he manned a one-person office in South St. Louis. He catered to individuals who needed wills and trusts and corporations and divorces and things like that. And
certain things never change. Huh?
Yeah, right, exactly.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I think the biggest thing I learned from my mother was tenacity. She never went to college, but she was extremely bright, extremely well-written, and always pushing to get done what needed to be done around the house and in our family. She worked for my father at the end of his career. She was essentially his office manager and, you know, secretary, if you will. There were a couple people over there, but she was my dad's right-hand person and, you know, kept him on schedule, kept him on track, and was very, very tenacious in her work and didn't let down much at all on in work or with us. My father was a man of faith. You know, loved to go to church. You know, really, I think brought honesty to his work. I think his clients loved him because he was friendly and outgoing and considerate and, you know, wanted to know about them. And so I think the way I treat people, I try to be good to people, as good as I can be. And, you know, I learned that from my father. I remember very well, you know, when I started in law, there were all kinds of different people. I was meeting people from the East Coast and, you know, different communities, and my dad reminded me, you know, I wasn't all that great, and you know, I had to be patient and tolerant and understand other people, and I was, and I learned that from him.
All right, God sends us angels, Steve. You're at Marquette University. You got a 2.8 GPA. And God sends you a Jesuit priest. And I quote you, Jack, he changed my life.
True. Father Donald Keefe grew up in upstate rural New York, went to Colgate University, entered the Jesuits, and got a law degree from Georgetown. I took a random theology class from him, and I just thought he was a magnificent theologian, priest, friend, and he supported my efforts to go to law school. I excelled in his classes. I took, I think, three from Don Keefe, and I got good grades in all of them. He inspired me because he was patient and also, I would say, encouraging of me. And then when I determined I wanted to go to law school in St. Louis and I was borderline in terms of the grades, as you mentioned, he told me I could do it. He wrote a letter of recommendation for me to St. Louis University. He gave me some advice and tips on how to be a good law student. And he was just a very solid man.
All right. Borderline getting in, but St. Louis Law School, first year, you were top 10 student.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I quote Dennis Archer now. He believes that the profession of law is a calling. What does he mean?
Well, I think you can drive trucks or practice law or run a restaurant or do any of the many things that people do as a job to make money, feed the family, and our country was built on that type of ethic. I think law, religious life, law enforcement, medicine, it's not just a way of making money and supporting your family. It's a calling to help other people. And a profession in which you have a responsibility beyond your immediate needs and concerns as a person to the larger elements in society. In law, we're asked to serve the poor. We're asked to do pro bono work. We're asked to pick up and represent some of the most marginal folks in our community. And that goes well beyond just making money to feed the family.
We're talking to the Honorable Stephen Murphy. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with the Honorable Stephen Murphy. Honor, from 87 to 92, you worked for the U.S. Department of Justice as a trial attorney in the civil and tax divisions in Washington. And then from 92 to 2000, you were an assistant U.S. attorney in Detroit. Talk about those couple of chapters.
It was a huge break and very unexpected to be hired by the Department of Justice in Washington. Those jobs were filled by some of the brightest people from some of the finest law schools in America. And so when I started working with men and women from other places and other schools who were very, very bright, I think I developed a mental edge or an intellectual capacity to practice law that I wouldn't have had if I were just working for my dad back home. And in addition to that, I was charged with a sense of ethics that, again, went beyond simply practicing law, but acknowledging that we were appearing on behalf of the United States government. We had to be fair in our dealings, striking hard blows, but fair ones as a prosecutor, and always keeping an ethical line when you were defending any federal agency. I think the main thing that I got out of the federal government was an ability to handle my own cases as a first-line lawyer and to actually get into court, try cases, appear before judges, argue in front of juries. Those things in large corporate law firms or even mid-sized law firms that represent business or, you know, individuals who can pay their fees are reserved for people who have been there for a long time. So I wasn't just carrying the bags of senior lawyers. I was actually handling my own cases, and that gave me a tremendous amount of confidence, experience, and I think some abilities to understand what actually went on in the courtroom. So those years were, I think experience-wise, those were probably the most meaningful of my career.
So that was a dozen years serving America.
Yeah.
Then you join General Motors.
Right.
You go to a different world.
Right.
From 2000 to 2005. Talk about that chapters with General Motors.
Well, I really enjoyed General Motors. I had two major jury trials in 1996 and 1998. And in one of them, a General Motors dealer had gotten in, well, both of them, a General Motors dealer had gotten in trouble on one side with a bank and on the other side with the IRS. And so through those experiences, I worked with a couple of lawyers at General Motors who I became close to and really admired. And by 2000, as you mentioned, I had been in the Justice Department for 12 years total. And I was at the end of the line, you know, in terms of, you know, there were probably more things I could have done. But in terms of, you know, financial incentives and management, all these types of things, I didn't see that I was going to be going much further. And I met with a couple of people at General Motors, and I was hired into the litigation section of the legal staff. And it was unbelievable. I had some of the largest cases in the. I wasn't 100% in charge of all these cases. I was part of various teams, and we had very skillful outside lawyers representing the company. But I would be involved in these things. Trying to represent the company and mitigate risk or uncover behavior by employees that would lead to some jeopardy with the federal government or whatever the case may be. And then just, giving advice to the security team. And it was amazing. I was so lucky to be there. That at the time, obviously, General Motors was probably the, you know, number one company in terms of capitalization in America. So we had the most sophisticated legal issues and the best lawyers. In addition to that, OnStar was just starting out, and federal law enforcement wanted to access law enforcement for legitimate law enforcement purposes, but we were very concerned about how those types of decisions might affect the privacy of our customers. And I had a couple of years of very fascinating work involving that, so it was a good experience.
Okay, let's go to June 8th, 2005, and something happened that I don't think ever happens anymore. You were confirmed by unanimous consent, Your Honor, of the United States Senate to become United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan.
Yes.
Wow. That was your dream job.
It was. Having been an assistant United States attorney and had 8 years in Detroit in that office, the idea that I could go back as the U.S. attorney actually appointed by the president was breathtaking to me. And truly a career highlight. And you're right, Jack. I never sought out a judgeship. I never wanted to be the general counsel of General Motors. I kind of knew those things were a pretty far reach for me, but I had an opportunity to try to become United States attorney, and I did. And to my great surprise, I was selected. And I love that job. As you mentioned, it was a career high, and I would have been very satisfied to leave there and go back to what I had been doing or something else. But it was a tremendous group of people and a tremendous opportunity to work with numerous constituencies in the community, law enforcement, the court, Washington, D.C. It was just a really remarkable opportunity for me.
You oversaw Detroit, Flint, Bay City. You had over 100 lawyers and 100 support staff.
Yep.
What did you do all day?
Well, you're the chief executive, right? And I learned you're not in place to be handling jury trials and guilty pleas and depositions. You're there to provide leadership to the office. And so there was an element of management, traditional, hardcore management, you know, leading people and hiring and firing and that type of thing. But this was just in the wake of 9/11, I think 3 or 4 years after the 9/11 disaster. I had an opportunity to go into the Arab American community in Dearborn and make some friends there and try to reassure them that while we were very strong and insistent upon enforcing national security laws, we weren't there to unduly or unfairly go after any particular groups of people. As I mentioned, I had an incredible opportunity to meet with colleagues in other cities and in Washington, D.C., because when the Justice Department formed policy out of Washington, it was our job to execute it, and certainly in the national security realm as well as in white-collar crime, narcotics, things like that, we had some priorities we needed to mention. And then, frankly, I dealt with the press when the office needed somebody to explain what we were doing or have questions about cases, whatever, it would be my job to
You were like the Judge Judy of Detroit.
No,
really.
I was not like the Judge Judy, but I was really lucky to have that job, and it was wonderful.
We're talking to His Honor Stephen Murphy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about June 24th, 2008. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with the Honorable Stephen Murphy. Your Honor, June 24th, 2008. What happened?
That was the day that the Senate confirmed me, and I was formally appointed as U.S. District Judge in Detroit. Obviously, a major day in the life of any American, but for me in particular, absolutely could not believe that that had happened to me. As I mentioned earlier, I would have been fine having been appointed United States attorney and gone back into private life, but you know, history being what it is, and you know, me being in a particular place at a particular time, I was apparently an attractive candidate to both the White House and the Michigan senators who confirmed me to be appointed a judge, and I was, and you know, I never could have planned for it. I never could have expected it. And so June 24th, I remember vividly, I was actually on government business as U.S. attorney in Buffalo. And somebody told me that our nominations were up for a vote in the Senate. And I ended up watching my confirmation at the Hyatt Hotel with a couple of friends of mine in Buffalo. And the Senate voted to confirm myself and two other judges that day, Michigan judges. And it was unbelievable.
Okay, so for 20-plus years, you were on this side of the bench as
yes.
a lawyer.
Yes.
And then you go to the other side of the bench, and you sit a little higher,
yes.
and you put black robe on. What's that transition like?
Well, I mean, it was pretty bizarre at first for the reasons you just say. I you know, had to learn to conduct myself as an impartial adjudicator of facts and applying the law in a fair manner. Whereas, as you mentioned, for 20 years, I had been an advocate for one position or another. I wouldn't say it was a difficult transition, but it took a lot of work and a lot of open-mindedness. And I do not see things now the same way I saw them when I was first appointed in 2008. And I think that's probably true of any judge who's serious about his or her craft. But yes, you're right. I was not at liberty to be advancing arguments. I was receiving, hearing, and evaluating legal arguments in an effort to impartially apply the law to solve problems between two disparate parties.
Your Honor, what do all great judges have in common?
Well, I think there's a number of things I could mention to answer that question, but I think without a doubt, most judges and citizens would agree that fairness is the hallmark of a great judge. You know, an ability to be fair to both sides, to be even-handed, to be reasoned in the results that he or she seeks to impose in any lawsuit. And I think parties who appear before a judge should expect to be fairly heard and to be understood and to walk away if they're in the losing position of an argument to say, you know, I don't like the result, but I was heard fairly and I had an opportunity to say what was on my mind.
Okay, let's go back thousands of years. There was a man named Socrates, and he believed that a great judge had four traits: hear courteously, consider soberly, answer wisely, and decide impartially. What do those four things mean to you?
Well, it's remarkable to me that Socrates had a handle on what judges should do thousands of years ago. I think hearing courteously means you have to have a courtroom demeanor that encourages dialogue and the advancement of arguments by the lawyers. You know, obviously, we all, maybe not all of us, but certainly me, have had our moments where we've let down on courtesy because we're frustrated or whatever the case may be. I think those episodes should be very rare, and I think that we should be maybe not friendly, but professional, courteous, and polite to those who appear before us. Sober consideration of legal issues is simply going back to the chambers and thinking about things in terms of what the law says and what's right and what's not, and not basing any particular decision on any frivolous considerations that don't have things to do with the law. Wise answers, I think, are those that resolve cases in a manner that's consistent with the law, fair to both sides, and again, not anything that's novel or unexpected or anything that I would make up as a person, but rather as a judge who's appointed to resolve cases within the bounds of the law. And then impartiality I spoke about earlier, I think fairness to both sides and not looking at any particular issue through the lens of one side, being partial to one side or the other is probably the most important thing we do.
Okay, there's three levels of our federal court system.
Yes.
I believe. There's the Supreme Court, there's the U.S. Court of Appeals, and then there's the U.S. District Courts. Can you talk about those three levels, Your Honor?
Well, I'm on the U.S. District Court. All matters originate in our court with trials, guilty pleas or convictions in criminal cases, judgments upon trial or summary judgment or whatever the case may be in civil matters. And when we make final decisions, those may be appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals. Not all cases are appealed for one reason or another. Either the issues are clear or perhaps parties settle or resolve their claims. But when cases go to the U.S. Court of Appeals, which is located in Cincinnati for our court, three judges evaluate the propriety of a district judge's decision or ruling and either affirm it or overturn and remand the case back to the district court. And then, of course, the Supreme Court of the United States reviews the work of the 13 circuit courts. I think they're down to resolving maybe 60 or 80 cases per year, but the Supreme Court is the final word on all federal law and decides issues that impact people nationwide. They would not hear an appeal in a very narrow type of case that doesn't have some sort of national effect.
We're talking to the Honorable Stephen Murphy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about something that happened 6 days ago. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoholm.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to the Honorable Stephen Murphy. 6 days ago, Your Honor, tall cotton, you became the chief judge of the U.S. Eastern District of Michigan. Did you go to Amy and the kids and say, honey, things are going to change at home?
No. I didn't have much of a choice. It was my time to become chief judge. The current or the previous chief judge left, and I was next in seniority. And since I'm not 70 years old yet, I was eligible to be chief judge. But no, it's remarkable to me, Jack, that a young man from St. Louis County, Missouri, is here in Detroit, and I've been
an average student in college,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've been a federal judge now for almost 18 years, and it was my time to serve. And I will get no special treatment at home. I never do, but I'm excited because we have a great court. We have a great group of people who are committed to all those things that Socrates mentioned were reminiscent or at least characteristic of a great judge. And I think I can lead our court effectively.
Amy, what Steve is really saying is that he's going to continue to get special treatment at home like he does every day, always at home. So, okay, the last 17 years, you've been on the other side of the bench. What's the biggest thing, Your Honor, you've learned in those 17 years?
I think the biggest thing I have learned is to treat individuals, especially on the criminal side, with compassion. The criminal cases are particularly difficult for me. A lot of the young men and women who come before me have been dealt a deck of cards that are particularly, or a hand of cards that are particularly difficult to play. And so I think that it's easy as a former prosecutor to say, oh, I understand the charge, I know what the sentence is called for, and then just, announce a number. But I think I've learned that when a number rolls off of my tongue, it means something much different to the individual standing before me and his or her family. And so fashioning the type of sentence in a criminal case that might help an individual get better, be rehabilitated, and return to society more whole is much more attractive to me than just sending people away and throwing the key away. So that's one thing from my prosecutorial background that's changed quite a bit.
When we had breakfast recently, you talked a lot about now, Jack, it's about giving people a second chance. Can you share with us a couple examples of that?
Yeah, I think people deserve a second chance from time to time. I just had a case this past week where a young man was on probation, and he started fouling up on his probation, and he wasn't reporting in a timely manner. He might have smoked a little marijuana on probation, which are violations, and he came in and was looking at revocation of probation and jail time. And it turns out he had just lost his mother, and he was stressed out by the death and had to take care of the funeral and so on and so forth. And I think he had maybe, 10 months of probation left. And so rather than incarcerate him after all that, I said, all right, we're going to continue probation and not put you in jail. Show us what you can do in the next 10 months. And if everything goes okay and you don't smoke marijuana and you report to your probation officer, you'll finish your probation. You won't have to go back to jail. So I thought that was, an effort to help someone who needed some help and give them a second chance.
A lot of people admire Judge Stephen Murphy. Was there one or two judges in your career that you said, wow?
Well, yes. I mean, there were a number of judges. You have to understand, I appeared before almost all of them. at one point or another on our court. And I'll tell you, this is very interesting. When I was assigned an office in the building, I sat next to a judge by the name of Avern Cohn. I had absolutely nothing in common with Avern Cohn. Our religion, our politics, our age, our residence, our upbringings could not have been more different. But I did admire him, and he taught me a lot, and he was a very practical man. When I had questions as a new judge, I would frequently go down to his office, sometimes in my robe, and ask him how to deal with certain things, and he always advised me. But, you know, Judge Paul Gadola was a great, great friend of mine. I was so privileged to be a pallbearer in his funeral, and I admired him from the time I met him, which was 1993. And we were on the court together for a very brief time, and I inherited his entire caseload. And, you know, we've had tremendous judges in Detroit. Judges Cook and Zatkoff and Cleland and Friedman have all been leaders of our court. And I have good friends both in the junior ranks and some of the senior members of our court now. And it's amazing. These are legends of the local bar whose names I'm giving you. And to be... you know, to be included in their group is very amazing to me.
As our time winds down together tonight, talk to a young person about a life of public service.
Nothing better. If you're able to serve the public, you're not going to make a tremendous amount of money, but you will have the fulfillment of doing good things for other people, promoting the security of our country, hopefully promoting the good of all the people, and maybe making the difference for positive change in the life of one or more individuals. So I think that a noble life of public service is one that is greatly fulfilling and something that kids these days would really benefit from doing.
And our Heavenly Father, as the Honorable Stephen Murphy starts the newest chapter in his life, be with them, guide them, direct them. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.